In today's episode, we will hear from Rochelle. She is a health-minded practitioner who helps others release trapped emotions so they can live healthier and happier lives. Rochelle opens up about her difficult adolescence, where she underwent lots of brainwashing, manipulation, and overall emotional abuse. She was the oldest daughter of four children, and she was the most targeted by a narcissistic parent. Let's hear more about the street she grew up on. You are listening to The Streets of Our Lives. My name is Lena LaRue, a recovering, people-pleasing, overachieving perfectionist with a lot of repressed emotions from my past. I want to invite you on my journey to learning how one can emotionally and physically heal from difficult life experiences. The goal is to first recognize how our past experiences affect every aspect of our lives, our health, relationships, self-image, etc. Once we recognize how our past is affecting our lives, we can then decide to break free from its limiting hold it has had on us. We can learn how to break old limiting patterns of thinking and adopt other healing strategies so we can start living a guilt-free, healthy life where we can feel confident and at peace with ourselves and the world around us. If this sounds like exactly what you need, then keep on listening. None of the information you hear is meant to replace professional guidance. This podcast is meant for inspirational purposes only, and you are encouraged to seek out professional advice elsewhere. So, Rochelle, before we get into the details, let me ask you this first. If you had to describe your teen years in just 3 to 5 words, what words would you use?
I would describe my teenage years as confusing, robotic, manipulative, passive aggressive.
So let's explore that some more. So, Rochelle, why don't you share with us some more about the street you grew up on?
So when I was growing up, I'd say that my childhood felt very normal. Like, there wasn't anything that was like, oh, this is, you know, wrong or this isn't normal. Everything seemed to start going downhill after one of my grandparents passed. And it really affected my father, and he just kind of went off the rails. He didn't have somebody kind of holding him in anymore, basically, in terms of just being accountable to somebody for what he was thinking and believing and his actions, right? And so looking back now, I can see that he was a narcissist. Is a narcissist. It's always all about him. Everything is about him.
For those of you who do not know what a narcissist is, I will give a very simplistic and short explanation. I'm going to share a definition from the website PsychDB. It's a free psychiatric reference for medical students, residents, and physicians. Narcissistic personality disorder is a personality disorder where individuals have a grandiose sense of their own self-importance, but are also extremely sensitive to criticism. There may be little ability to empathize with others, and individuals are more concerned about appearance than substance. It is characterized by arrogance, grandiosity, a need for admiration, and a tendency to exploit others. Individuals with this condition often have a sense of excessive entitlement and may demand special treatment.
So growing up, when I hit teenage years, there was a lot of conflict between my mom and him that was just coming out more and more because she was standing up to him and being like, no, this is not okay, right? And so that created a lot of, you know, arguments that I would hear, and I would, you know, go outside because I didn't want to hear that. You know, so it's a lot of hiding, honestly, like hiding from reality. He was very passive aggressive. So it wasn't like there was ever any physical abuse And when I was living in it, part of me felt like it would have been easier if there had been physical abuse, because then there, we could have done something, right? But when it's all emotional, it's like your word against his word, and it just felt like there was no way out.
So I just want to touch on something important here. When Rochelle says that it would have been easier if her father had been physically abusive to her family, she says this because then they would have had evidence or reason enough to have the police arrest him and get him out of their lives. During the conversation, I told Rochelle that I had actually had the same thoughts before. I want to say that I know that there are survivors who have experienced violent physical abuse, and in no way are we saying that being physically abused is welcomed or preferable. We also do not want to diminish the traumatic nature of being physically hurt. We're simply just sharing thoughts that have crossed our minds in the heat of being emotionally attacked by a narcissist and wishing someone could have taken them away so they couldn't continue to defeat our spirits.
Yeah, so I think, and that was also my struggle, like going into healing also, because I would say, oh, well, I didn't go through as much abuse as this other person, right? So I don't have any trauma. Not true. Because our traumas affect us individually, and the trauma that I went through was affecting my life. But it wasn't until I actually like came to terms with that, like, oh, I actually do have trauma. Like, this was a trauma in my life that it's okay that it wasn't like somebody else's. It's still impacting me, and I still need to heal.
Rochelle goes on to talk about the spiritual abuse she received from her dad. Let me tell you, I got the chills when she told me about how her dad would take Bible verses and twist them to his benefit.
So when I was growing up, there's a lot of passive aggressiveness, and he was also very spiritually abusive. So he would take scripture and he would twist it so that you always felt like you were the one in the wrong. So, and this was especially true because I was a female, okay? My brother did not have the same experience as all of me and my sisters did, because he would take scriptures about Eve, and he would take scriptures about, you know, women in general being the weaker sex, and he would just twist it all up in such a way that you were like, why did God even give women a mouth? Like, he should just have made us just like to just work and not be able to speak, not be able to think, because there's no point in us thinking because we're not allowed to talk and share our opinions, and we have no voice.
Some of you may know that I am also a Bible believer, so when I hear about spiritual abuse like this, it really frustrates me. Even if you don't practice a religious faith, I'm sure that it feels uncomfortable when you hear vicious message coming from so-called religious people. You know, they're trying to dominate you with their false teachings. It's just sick, in my opinion. So if that wasn't bad enough, Rochelle shared with me some more about the controlling environment she lived in from the ages of 15 to 18.
So there was a lot of spiritual abuse, and a lot of, in me, emotionally feeling like, you know, why did God make me a woman? Struggling with that identity. And then also wanting to do more with my life, but he would not allow me to go to college. I couldn't go even to do like college online. I was not allowed to do that. I couldn't take sewing jobs for my business. I had started a sewing business. And at one point, because I was not willing to hand over funds for my college education that my grandparents had set aside for me, because I wasn't willing to give that to him, He was like, all right, you don't get to take any more sewing jobs. I'm not going to pay for your medical bills. If you have any medical issues, I'm not going to pay for your violin lessons anymore. And I didn't have a driver's license. I didn't even have a social security card. I could not even get a job out of the home at all. I was completely and utterly trapped. And he would even say things like, the only way you're leaving my home is, and my brain actually blocked this for a very long time. So I just recently remembered that he has said this. But he would say, the only way you're leaving my home is married to the man that I pick out for you or in a coffin, basically.
So Rochelle's dad wanted to hold her captive. He straight up told her that she would be in his home under his control unless she married the person he saw fit, or until the day she died. That is a really twisted thing to say to one's kid. I felt myself get really frustrated when she told me that. She didn't deserve to be treated like that. Rochelle was a responsible teenager who had aspirations to run her sewing business, to possibly go to college. She wasn't going out with bad influences and being irresponsible. But sadly, this is very typical behavior of narcissist parents. They could have really responsible kids, and instead of appreciating the well-behaved children they have, they instead criticize them, control them, and treat them like an object. If the child doesn't give the narcissist parent what they want, in this case, Rochelle's dad wanted her inheritance, the narcissist parent will make their child's life miserable. So after learning about how he treated her, I asked Rochelle if she ever had moments where she would stand up to her dad and defend herself.
I really struggled with the idea of standing up to him because, like, I was literally at his, he literally was at home all the time. He didn't have an outside job. He worked from home. So he was always there. And so there was a lot of fear. Fear is actually, I believe, a generational sin because my dad lived in fear, right? And so the whole atmosphere of the home is literally just fear. And with all the things that happened in those years with him and my mom and conversations that we'd have with us, I mean, there was so much brainwashing too, that for a long time, like for a while, I thought he was right because he would just say things over and over and over and over and over and over again. And when people do that, you start to believe that it's true, right? And so the only way that I could get out of that place of really just being so confused and like, am I right or is he right? Because he's using this scripture and I feel like something's wrong, but I can't even put my finger on it because it's so twisted, right? It's like there's so much truth, but it's twisted the wrong way. And you're like, something's wrong with this, but you can't even put a finger on it because you're so brainwashed. That's how it was. And so I had a secret cell phone that my mom gave me so I would be able to call people and talk to them because my dad would listen on the phone line. So if I called on the home phone, he would be listening in and he could use anything against us. And he would, right? So I would call a pastor friend that I met when I was 18. And I'd call him, and I remember I'd either be outside talking to him or I'd be in the bathroom with the shower going with the vent on, right? So that he couldn't hear the conversation that I was having. And I'd just be like in the bathroom whispering, and I'd be like, here's what dad said at dinner time when he was doing devotions. And here's what I thought about it. And I don't even know what to think. And then he would like talk me through and be like, no, you're correct. Like this is twisted. And here's what's really actually what it means. And so like I had to have that, person in my life to help me even know like what was right at what was wrong because everything was so twisted up.
It is so sad that Rochelle had to have secret conversations in the bathroom just to have an honest, safe place to seek guidance during this time. If any of you have lived with a narcissist, I know you can relate to this type of feeling. Always speaking in a low voice, maybe going underneath your bed sheets, turning on fans and showers to help drown out your voice. When you just need someone to speak to who you can trust, who you can turn to, without the narcissist listening in. In this next part, you are going to hear about a very frustrating conversation that Rochelle had with her father. This was the conversation that finally motivated Rochelle to get out of the prison she was living in.
We went to a family conference and I played the violin with him. He's a concert pianist. And I played the violin on stage. And the whole point of that was that he would be able to find a guy that would be interested in me. And so this one day he's like, "All right, Rochelle, we're going to go on a date." And I'm like, "Oh my word, you gotta be kidding me." I literally brought like a recorder along because I was like, I don't know what this conversation is going to be, but I need to record it. And honestly, like it's amazing how your brain just blanks out a lot. You know, like I can remember the feelings that I had when I was in my teen years. I don't remember a lot of like actual conversations. I don't remember a lot of words. I just know how they made me feel, right? Because our nervous system is like, well, you're not feeling safe, and we're going to try and keep you safe, and we're just going to blank this out, right? We're just going to blank this out. And then you're like, and that also makes it hard to heal when you don't remember all the specifics. You're like, was I crazy? Like, was I literally crazy for thinking that this was like totally a disaster mess, right? Because you don't literally remember all the things. But anyway, so he takes me on this date and he is telling me about this guy that's apparently interested in me, but how he can't allow me to court him because I am not being submissive to my father in giving him the money from my educational fund. And I'm thinking this whole time, I'm like, I don't even care that, like, you might like this guy. I already do not. If he likes you, it's already a problem. Right? But I'm like, well, who is it? He wouldn't even tell me a name. So I don't even know if he was making that whole thing up. He could have been. I don't even know. To this day, I do not know who this guy was. Then he was like, you know, your sister is so amazing with kids. Because my younger sister, Nicole, was really good with kids. And he was like, you're going to be a terrible mom. Like, he literally spoke that over me, okay? And this whole conversation, I am just trying to literally not blow up because I am so angry and I am so frustrated. But if I say anything, it gets used against me. So I don't say anything, right? And so there was this conversation, right? And I am like, after this conversation, I knew that there was nothing left for me at home. Like, I had to figure out how to leave. But he was there all the time. So how's that going to happen, right? So I didn't know how it's going to happen, but I started moving stuff out, like, very slowly. I started taking things down to my neighbor's shed. And I would store them in there. I asked her, like, hey, can I put stuff in here? Because I'm going to be moving out and it's going to be very sudden. And I don't know when I'm going to go, but I can't have all this. I can't pack up all this stuff and take it all when I leave. So I'm going to have to come back, but I'm not going to come back to my parents' house. And we lived on a hill. So, you know, we were at the top and my neighbor was here. So it's not like he would see if I came and picked up stuff at my neighbor's house. So I literally would like secretly sneak things out of the house. I couldn't even tell my siblings that I was going because two of my siblings were very much brainwashed by him. So they were on his side. And now, of course, like they see what was happening and, you know, and we're all on the same page now about it being very abusive. But at the time, they were brainwashed. Like they were the youngest, like they were 9 and 12. You know, they're not going to know. So I'm just like moving things out little by little. And I only have like bare minimum in my room, you know. And then I was just waiting. And one day, he was recording a new song for his album. And so he actually had to leave the house. And I actually had to go with him. So, because he wanted me to record a violin solo on his CD. So I'm in there and I did my part and we were recording in about, well, we were recording in my little town. I lived in a very small town and so I could walk home. So I finished the recording and I said, hey, I'm going to go back home. And he's like, okay, make a sandwich for me. So I go home, I walk home, and as I'm walking home, I'm like, is this the day? Like, do I do this? And of course, my heart is like beating out of my chest, right? And I make the phone call to my friend who's going to get me and help me get out that I was going to stay with until things died down, and then I was going to move in with a different family. So I call up my friend, and I'm like, okay, today's the day. I need you to come get me right now.
Today is the day. What a strong phrase that's been used in so many life-changing moments when one makes a decision that they know is for their good. I remember feeling so nervous yet ecstatic for Rochelle when hearing this part of her story.
So I get home, I throw everything in garbage bags, I'm rushing around the house, and I printed out a letter that I left to my dad, and I was like, here are all the reasons why I'm leaving and why, like, this is what you're doing is not okay. I had to put in a letter because I couldn't tell him face to face. And I'm trying to remember if I made the sandwich. I don't remember. I feel like a part of me was like, yes, I'm going to make the sandwich. Just because, like, I still wanted to be respectful, right? Even though it was a hot mess. So anyway, then he calls to see, like, if the sandwich is made, I think. I don't remember. I just remember that he called and we were like, we have to leave right now. And we're like, so we rush out the door and we drive away and just hope that he doesn't see us, you know, in passing, right?
So after hearing that, I know I had a mix of emotions. For one, I had goosebumps up and down my arms, hearing how she had to hurry up and rush out of the house before her dad got home. I also remember thinking, Rochelle, you are a much nicer person than I am. I would not have made his sandwich. Or if I made the sandwich, I would have eaten it myself and written something on the letter like, by the way, Dad, I'm eating your sandwich as I write this. It tastes like freedom.
He didn't know where I was, and he didn't have my number. So he couldn't contact me anymore. Like, thank goodness. But after that, he was like, well, your siblings don't get to see you because you're being rebellious, right? So I basically was cut off from all of my family for a time because I was considered the rebellious daughter who ran away from home.
Rochelle may have been cut off from her family for some time, but this so-called rebellious daughter was finally able to have independence. She started her sewing business again. She learned how to drive. She became a member of a church, basically doing all the things that she wasn't allowed to do before. You are listening to The Streets of Our Lives with Lena LaRue. In order to stay accountable to improving your overall well-being, you need systems in place to help you stay focused on your intentions. A simple and affordable system you can implement is tracking your day-to-day habits and actions in a journal. Lucky for you, I have a collection of journals that I have created to help you do just that. My 90-day wellness journals are meant to help you keep track of your day. Each day, you will be able to track the following: your food and supplement intake, your physical activity or self-care practices, your physical symptoms, and your emotions and feelings. You also have a section to set your daily intentions at the beginning of the day, as well as a section at the end of the day to reflect on your challenges and successes and what you are grateful for. These journals are great for those who are keeping track of their mood and emotions, for those who have specific weight goals, for those who are recovering post-surgery or injury, for those who are preparing for an athletic competition, and for anyone who simply just wants to keep track of their overall well-being. You can purchase these journals online at Amazon. I will make sure to put a link in the show notes so you can get one of these journals for yourself or for a loved one. Now, let's get back to the show.
And so all of that stuff happened, and then my mom filed for a separation so that she would have custody over the kids in case anything happened, have more, you know, rights to finances and all that stuff. So it kind of set the stage, basically, for a bunch of other things to happen. And of course, my dad was pissed that my mom filed for separation. Like, he was livid, right? And so he actually tried a stunt to blackmail her into, like, dropping it. And his stunt was that he took my two younger siblings, remember, the ones that are more on his in his corner, 9 and 12, and he told them to get into our van and to drive it up to Wyoming to a friend's house. And he thought, oh, well, my mom won't know where they are, and so in order to get her kids back, she'll drop the separation. Well, my mom had worried about him kidnapping the kids, and we had actually installed secretly a GPS system on the van. So when that happened, she called me and she's like, I can't find Christian and Autumn. I don't know where they are. I need you to look and see where the van is. And we could actually see the van traveling up I-80, which is a 2-lane highway at 30 miles an hour. And so,
I have a question. Who was driving, the 12-year-old or the 9-year-old?
Yeah, the 12-year-old.
Are you kidding? Here, they could reach the pet. I guess you could. Oh.
Yeah.
That he put his children in danger for his own pride.
Yes. Yes, he did. Yes. And it was honestly an answer to prayer in the sense of, like, we needed him to do something stupid, right? So we could actually have legal action to take, because we couldn't do anything before, because we couldn't do anything on the church realm, because he wasn't a member of the church. It was ridiculous. But so he goes into hiding. The police finally find him. He goes into jail. He has, you know, he has a restraining order. He's not allowed to contact my mom. He's not allowed to contact any of the kids until they're over 18 or for a certain amount of years. There was this whole court case, of course, that we had to go through. And it was just nutso. But, I mean, that's the kind of level he would go to make it look like, you know, he was the right, he was the good person, he was fine, you know.
What in the world did we just hear? I felt so dumbfounded when hearing that craziness, that her dad had his 12-year-old and 9-year-old kids drive on the interstate so his wife would cave into him. This is just another example of the lengths that narcissists will go to get their way. When Rochelle told me this story, I just remember thinking, thank God her siblings were not hurt, and thank God they got this toxic, child-endangering person out of their lives. I'm so glad that you got out of it. And you know what? It's like you said, although leaving for you was scary, you were 18, you didn't know how to drive, you didn't have any freedom.
Yeah.
And you said, you know what, I have to get out of this. Like you said, it set up like it was like this domino effect.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I bet you your mom was like, wow, my daughter could do this. She said, no, I am tired of this. I'm going to live my life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just, so you took that first step to helping your family, as difficult as it may have been. I'm just, you know, thank God for you that you had that courage to care enough about yourself, because,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm sure that you motivated and inspired your mom. So Rochelle's journey didn't stop there. As we know, one doesn't just leave an abusive environment and everything just becomes sunshine and lollipops and butterflies. No. Trauma stays in us whether we realize it or not. Because I know Rochelle is passionate about her healing process and helping others, I knew that somewhere down the line, she must have had a realization that she needed to work on her healing. Just like that moment she had when she realized she had to leave the abusive home she was in at 18 years old, she also had moments where she recognized that she needed to embark on a healing journey.
The first years out of it, you know, I think I thought, oh, you know, I'm good. Like, I've processed, just because I didn't just because it wasn't at the forefront of my brain. So this is what I would say to the people listening. Just because you're not thinking about it does not mean it's not affecting you. So I was just like blocking it all out. And I was like, oh, great. Like, I've processed my trauma. I can move on from my life now. And now I'm just, it's hilarious to me, but that's how your brain works too. I got married. And that, there was also trauma there. It was like trauma on top of trauma, right? Like, because we both brought baggage in that we didn't even realize there was baggage. My husband has PTSD, which we didn't even know until my first child was born. So, and then he got triggered with her crying. So it was like a whole thing, right? And so we're figuring out, oh, he has PTSD, so he goes to counseling. I had done the court-ordered counseling for all the kids. So I had been to counseling and I was like, okay, great. I've processed this. Not even close. It was when I was pregnant with my third that I was having panic attacks. I was really struggling very hard with depression and anxiety. And I just realized, like, okay, like, there's a lot of stuff here that I need to heal. Went to another counselor and she did Splagna, which is like where they muscle test your body for emotions that you're holding on to. And that was my, like, that was kind of a light bulb moment for me, because up to that point, I had been like, that is so like new agey that your body holds on to emotions. Like, that just sounds,
that's what you thought at the moment, right?
Yeah, that sounds woo-woo to me, right? So when she, like, literally could, like, muscle test my body and find the exact year that my grandpa died and knew exactly what emotion my body was storing from that specific year, I was like, okay, our body really does store stuff. Okay. That was, like, my first, like, light bulb moment, right? And then my anxiety got better, and then I, you know, kind of stopped going to that counselor for a while. And then about a couple years later, maybe a year, I got this biofeedback machine called a Zydo scanner. And I would scan myself. It was really cool because it would show me what emotions were in my body. And then I'm like, wait, another light bulb moment, right? Like, there's a lot here. Like, there is, like, frustration. There is anger. There is, like, this whole list. Like, it was a lot of stuff that my body was just holding on to. And every time I would scan, my liver would also be, like, way out of balance. And I'm like, what the heck is going on? Like, I eat healthy. Like, we're toxin-free in our house. I had done a lot of health work already. And I'm just looking at these numbers and I'm like, how do I get rid of this frustration and anger? I don't even feel, like, consciously, I don't feel like I am a frustrated, angry person. But, like, subconsciously, I could be like, yeah, I could totally, that's probably, like, totally there, right? So I'm like, how do I get to that? It was like, it felt so deeply buried inside, right? And it was like, no amount of me just talking about the trauma was getting to the deepest roots of where it was in my brain. And that's when I discovered Aroma Freedom. So in the Aroma Freedom session, the emotion that pops up is frustration. And I could feel it in my jaw. I could feel it like just right there. Okay. And then I connected the two and I found that memory. And I breathed into it. And as I was breathing into it, my jaw got so, like, it literally was in pain. My jaw was in so much pain as I'm breathing into this memory. And I'm like breathing into it. I'm thinking on the side, like, I'm going to have to go get a chiropractic adjustment. I'm going to have to go get dry needling. Like, I don't know what's going on with my jaw, right? And I keep breathing into this memory and it finally just releases. And my jaw pain goes away. And my three words came into my mind. And that was, I forgive him. And it was so huge for me because my heart, like, I knew I had forgiven. So I'd already gone through the forgiving part of, like, I forgive him from my heart. Wow. But my body had never forgiven him.
So in her mind, she had consciously forgiven her father. But her body had not forgiven him because the body was still holding on to all those emotions.
And it was like, literally, if I had been a bird, like, it was like I could have just flown. It was like the chains that I had been trying to get out of for years and years and years finally dropped off my wrists. It was like I was finally free. And that one session just literally rewired my brain, and I was blown away. Like, I was so exhausted from that release, but I felt so free.
Are you tearing up right now? Because I had to get a tissue and wipe my eyes when Rochelle beautifully described the chains that fell off of her and how she felt free. That word, free. That's a word that many of us who have experienced abuse aim to feel. We want to feel free.
And then after that, I became certified in Aroma Freedom. So I kept doing more on myself. And then last Mother's Day, yes, last Mother's Day was a huge trigger for me, like huge. I was like, oh my word, I have got to find a therapist. And the Lord brought me to the right one. And I mean, I appreciate therapists. What I do with AFT is just incredible. And I think they work together really, really well. But I needed a therapist who could get to more than just like talking, because I already talked about everything. And she does spiritual stronghold work. And that was like the other piece that I was missing, was like finding the beliefs that were under the beliefs that were strongholds that Satan was using in my life and asking the Lord to speak truth into them. And so that was another piece, you know, a really big light bulb piece for my healing. And then finding like mind, body, spirit release on top of that, which is where I can ask the nervous system, what am I storing unconsciously, has been another huge piece. And now I actually put all those pieces together in my breakthrough sessions. I do Aroma Freedom work with spiritual stronghold work with mind, body, spirit release work. And it's pretty incredible.
So as you can see, Rochelle didn't just focus on her own healing, but she is now helping others on their healing journeys. As of this recording, Rochelle uses three modalities to help others. They are Aroma Freedom, spiritual stronghold work, and mind-body-spirit release. I asked her to go more in depth with the work that she does.
So with therapy, you're talking, right? And that's really key. You know, you need to have someone you can talk to, somebody safe, and that's really awesome, right? But talking does not get to the part of the brain that holds your emotions. That's your limbic system. And your limbic system cannot be communicated to with written or spoken language. And so we actually have to find other ways of releasing and processing emotions from the body that are not just talking. So with Aroma Freedom, what I like to say about Aroma Freedom is that it's really, really good for working through memories. It's really good for finding a traumatic or negative memory and reconsolidating it, which means that we're able to unlock the neurons connected to the memory, and we're able to break off the negative emotions connected to the memory so that when it reconsolidates about 5 hours later, there's no more triggers. Like, there is nothing left on that memory. You can look at it and feel neutral, which is an incredible place to be. It's not like it disappears, but you don't need it to disappear. You don't need it. You know it happened. You don't need to forget about it. You just need to not be triggered every time you think about it. And so that is huge for my clients and for myself, to be able to release emotions from memories. And then the spiritual stronghold work is, you know, very much just like finding a belief that is more than just a belief. It's a stronghold. And then we just pray into it. It's that one, the Lord does the work. You know, the Lord speaks his truth into it. And it's just incredible. When he speaks his truth into a stronghold, like, he sets you free, right? And then the mind-body-spirit release work that I do is where I muscle test the body through the nervous system, and I ask the body what emotions it wants to process, and it will pull up very specific words. And that's really helpful because it builds your self-awareness onto what you're storing inside. And the thing is, all on my journey, what I've discovered is that the emotions we're storing for our memories are also affecting our health. And so our emotions get stored in our organs, and when they get stored for a period of time, really depends on the person how long, but it basically just wears down that organ over time, and then you have a health problem. So your emotions always turn into a physical manifestation, okay? And so with the mind-body-spirit release, I'm able to release emotions stored in organs, in scar tissue, in the spine, in the whole body. And it's incredible for just being aware of what's happening. And then also when you release those things, then those organs, their function increases. Like, everything improves when you release emotions from the body because those block the body's ability to keep healing.
Can you hear the passion in Rochelle's voice? She didn't even miss a beat when she was explaining everything. You can feel her dedication to the work she does, and it's evident she has invested time and energy into learning about the deep interconnectedness between our body and mind. During our conversation, I shared with Rochelle how I've also been learning about the connection between my health conditions and some very strong emotional conflicts within the last few years. We ended up talking more about the connection between our stored emotions, trauma, and our physical health.
Last year, I had a bunch of health things happen after my husband had a freak accident. Well, put my body into fight, flight, freeze, and I had adrenal fatigue, I had weight gain, and I had edema. Well, I'm 30. I should not be having swelling in my lower legs, right? Okay, so get this. I asked a friend who could muscle test me, and I was like, oh my word, like, you've got to tell me what's going on. Like, why do I have edema? Why do I have nerve pain in my toes? Why, when I go to pour things, is my hand literally shaking? Like, this is not normal. Like, what's going on? And he's like, well, 85% of that is emotional. And I was like, what? Only 15%. 15% was a physical thing. And the same thing with my adrenals. Same thing. 69% emotional and 16% spiritual. I actually had a stronghold of fear. Remember how I said fear runs in my family? It was a stronghold that was affecting my adrenals. And only 6% of it was actually a physical thing with my adrenals. Okay. So like this is the kind of information that I'm trying to get out there for people and why I started doing the Mind, Body, Spirit release. Because I'm like, if we can get ahead of this, if we can start by preventing things before they turn into bigger things, because we actually are releasing emotions in the body, people can heal first. Like, we don't have to go down this route. And also, when you said that about, like, other people eating really bad and never having any health problems, you have to remember we came into this world with generational trauma. And that also impacts our health. So there are people that can get away with eating total crap and not have any health problems, but they did not have the same generational trauma as other people that are eating super clean and having health problems.
If this is your first time hearing about how your emotions can affect your physical body, then I hope hearing what Rochelle says will motivate you to dig into this topic more. I personally find it fascinating and life-changing. I'm also becoming more and more convinced that this type of knowledge can change our health, our relationships, and the world overall. If more people can know about this and we can stop these things before it happens, so people, one, don't have to experience such physical symptoms, go through surgeries, take so much meds, like all that physical pain, all of that, but not just that. If we can realize and all, if we can all realize how important this stuff is, we become more intentional human beings with our thoughts. We cannot just prevent people by being physically hurt. We will change the world by people being more thoughtful, loving, caring, patient, and intentional with each other.
Yes. And also, when you do the work to heal yourself and you actually learn why you do what you do, you can be way more compassionate when other people are doing things that you're like, that is very hurtful. And then you can be like, then you can come at it from a place of compassion and be like, there's something else going on there. Like their nervous system is freaking out about something. They've been hurt before. This is triggering something in them. And then you can come from a place of compassion instead of anger.
Or defensiveness or getting so, taking it so personal.
Exactly. And
I hope you can hear the honest excitement in both of our voices and that it will encourage you to maybe look at your own healing journey from a different perspective. I know Rochelle sure gave me some new things to try out when it comes to my journey. As we were wrapping up the conversation, I wanted to get an idea of what Rochelle's life looks like now. So I asked her the following. To bring this whole conversation full circle, Rochelle, I would like to ask you this question. We started off at the beginning with the 3 to 5 words that you used to describe your teen years. You know, you said like manipulative, robotic, passive aggression, brainwashing. So now, if you had to describe your present life in just 3 to 5 words, what words would you use?
I like this question. I would say healing, not healed, but healing, free, compassionate, more understanding, and also managed. Like, I'm much better at managing my mind now after healing a lot of the trauma in my brain.
That is really cool. And that's something I aspire to, is to be able to manage my mind, my thoughts.
It's like a full-time job. And some days I still like utterly fail, but I'm getting better and I'm getting better, right? We're never going to be perfect.
Notice how Rochelle used the word healing, not healed. I also like her other choice of words, free, compassionate, understanding, and managed. Which one of those words would you aspire to use for yourself? To finish up our conversation, I asked Rochelle to share some final words of advice to give us inspiration and motivation on our healing journeys.
What I would say is don't be afraid to begin. Like, emotional healing looks really scary, and your brain is going to tell you you don't have time. Your brain is going to tell you this is uncomfortable. We don't want to do it. And that's just your nervous system talking. Your nervous system is just like, we just want to feel safe all the time. Because that's its job, right? But if you are safe, you're not healing. And you actually have to sit in the uncomfortable. And you have to dig into something that's really painful in order to heal. And it doesn't take as long as you think it does when you actually are really intentional and you really make it a priority for your life and you invest into your healing. Like, honestly, don't try and DIY this. I tried that for years and years and years and got absolutely nowhere. And when you actually put money into it, you actually will get results. And get people that know how to help you, because trying to DIY it is just, you feel hopeless, you feel helpless, you don't get anywhere, and then you're like, this will never happen for me. This is not possible, but it is. You just need the right people on your team.
When I had met Rochelle on Instagram, I knew she was a healing practitioner, but had no idea about her past, nor did I know about her experience suffering with an emotionally and spiritually abusive narcissistic father. If you've listened to my previous episodes on the podcast, you will know that I also was raised by a narcissist father. I now know someone else who I can relate to on a deeper level. Because of that, I'm even more grateful that she and I connected and that she was willing to share her story with us. I'm sorry she had to go through living in such a manipulative, dishonest, fearful environment. But I am so happy she had the courage to leave, focus on herself, and now help many other people. If you felt inspired and encouraged by Rochelle, I urge you to reach out to her and see if she can help support your healing journey. I'm going to share her contact information in the description of the episode so you can reach her. While I found value in so many parts of this conversation, a key takeaway I would like to share is the difference between healing versus healed. You may have noticed how Rochelle pointed out that she is not healed, but healing. I thought that was such a powerful word choice because we humans have to recognize that this healing journey is a lifelong journey. It's an ongoing process that we will always be on, and that's okay. Why? Because challenges will come our way in life. Conflicts will arise. And we have the power to intentionally heal from those struggles that will happen. I am excited for this lifelong healing journey. What about you? This is Lena LaRue. I'll see you on the streets. You just listened to an episode of The Streets of Our Lives. This is Lena LaRue, the host and producer. I hope that you were encouraged and inspired by this episode. If you were, please help others find the podcast by subscribing, sharing, or leaving a rating on the show. Please feel free to reach out to me with any comments, questions, or suggestions for upcoming episodes. And if you'd like to monetarily support the show, you can find a link to make a donation in the description of the episode. I really thank you for your support.